are back talking with Lionel Parkinson. The book Holy Grail. I'm going to do this again. I am struggling already to not say Lionel Richie or something like that. And I'm okay. Lionel Parkinson, I got that right. But now I got to remember the Holy Virus. Holyvirus.net is the webpage. Holy Virus book is the, well, the basis, the principles that we were talking about here. And Lionel, as I understand it, you have a special deal for Feet the Fire listeners that they could get a copy of this hardcover book. Well, nice printed, nice pages, hardcover book, illustrations, etc. For $5, that's included shipping that you and your publisher are putting this on for Feet the Fire listeners, that they can get a copy of this book. And what do they need to do?
Yeah, that's right. Well, just they can either go to holyvirus.com or holyvirus.net, and you can either just send in a check or you can call in the order. But yeah, the offer is just for this program and this program only, as far as the listeners. In fact, as long as Feet the Fire is on, this offer is toward anyone that listens to this program. So just $5 for the book. That will cover the shipping and handling. And it's for the hardcover. So it's a pretty good exhaustive book on this whole subject of the Old Testament and New Testament, all the good, bad, and the ugly. I've had a lot of people enjoy this book, and it's opened their minds for the first time in their life, and I really enjoyed writing it for that purpose. So go ahead and take advantage of that that offer.
And it, you know, for me, I've been doing some work of my own, and I've come up with some questions and some things. So when I read the book, some of the items were the same, and some were extensions of the logic, and some were adjacent. So I was able to, like, oh, yeah, I see. You know, because I found some problems with things in the Old Testament. And when you address those to a fuller degree and so forth, it was like it all fell into place to me. So then it was a great process as I went on through the book, because it filled in a lot of blanks and spaces and problems that I had. Very well. So it's not force-fitted. There's no tricking here. There's no gymnastics involved. It's just the simple logical flow of truth that fills in the blanks, and it really does set you free. In this case, free from the bloodlust. You know, and Lionel, not to go off on tangents here, but, I mean, you can understand the fruit of basing your religion on a bloodlust when it comes to look who's standing in line for war. A lot of the Christian groups are the first people in line for war to shed blood, when it's pretty clear that through Jesus' teachings and revealing of the getting off the Babylonian stuff, that there really is very little call for that. I mean, look at him. He walked, was arrested, and was beaten and killed. And he could have called down a legion of angels, as you told Peter, if he wanted to. And so sometimes, you know, war may not be the answer. What is the answer is honoring humanity and not causing bloodshed. It also explains the high suicide rate in our troops today.
Yeah, I heard about that. There's an incredible amount of troops that that do come back committing suicide or getting on drugs. You know, I mean, in Vietnam, they got on drugs when they were over there. Now they're getting on drugs when they come back.
You know, one other thing before I got these things in my mind, and I brought up the coin earlier. I have a few reasons. One, I mean, I've been listening to a lot of the Patriot movement, and however that would be called, the truth movements and all that. And I would think that we would be careful to not base another, unbeknownst to perhaps to even those involved, but like a sister offshoot to the Babylonian principles. I mean, when we talk about the Constitution, and the Constitution is what we should base our country on, and so forth and so on. Yeah, but I think the greater picture would be the principles Jesus taught and living by those, whether they're constitutional or not. So, I mean, I personally have trouble when you talk about austerity cuts and whatnot, cutting back on social programs because it's unconstitutional. Now, maybe those people shouldn't be depending on it or not in the model, okay, but they are. And is it really, you know, something that Jesus' principles would advocate to simply cut off all these social services because they're not constitutional, and then these people would have to either live or die, fight or not, to get through this thing? It sounds like it's a mini version of the Illuminati, what they're doing by cutting off the world and seeing if the world could rise up to their level of which it seems like a mini version of that. And so I kind of wonder if we could actually tap into John the Baptist or Jesus in this political climate we're in now. Where would they be on, you know, how would they talk about issues such as the Constitution and the entitlements and whatnot?
Yeah, those are all very good questions. I think the situation today now is the United States operates still under Roman law. It even states that, the Roman civil law, according to the Black's Law Dictionary. They will not tolerate anybody living a separate life. What I mean by that, let's say that you found some property somewhere. You would still have to pay a property tax, which means you have to get yourself inside commerce again to be able to make money to pay that property tax to continue living on it. In other words, they make sure that they control commerce at all aspects of your life. So you're forced to be in the world, but your mind really is not of this world. It's constantly in turmoil against it. You'll feel that when the closer you get to the Father, you'll automatically will feel that, I promise you. But you won't feel it if you totally engage with being a citizen, with mind, soul, and spirit, you know. You won't have a problem. But John the Baptist, just in my opinion, he was hardcore. He would definitely would not go along with this system. He would be very much against the Constitution, because the term Constitution means the charter of government. And to him, there was only one government, and that was the government of the coming Messiah, the King. And Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. Thou sayest that I am a king. To this end was I born, and for this cause came I into the world, that I should bear witness unto the truth. Everyone that is of the truth hears my voice." Even in that statement, Jesus is a non-compromising, but that's because he's a king of another kingdom. It's not of this world, but he came into this world to call people out. So don't feel bad because you have to make money in order to pay your taxes. But recognize that the other side is totally blind of the fact that the Father created this world, and he owns all that property, and they will have to account for their actions for extortion, corruption, for them engaging in a system at the same time when the truth was at one point in time being taught to them. They chose to either engage with the Father once again, or to reject the teachings of the Father, which are the same thing as the teachings of Jesus. So I guess what I'm saying is, in the meantime, you're going to be forced, based on this Babylonian Roman system, to make money, but don't pursue it in such a way that it stops you from obeying the commandments of of a father. You're just going to, you have to breathe, you have to eat, and you have to drink, and you have to live somewhere. It's just the way it is. So, but they have no authorization from God to do what they do. Absolutely none. The authorization from Jesus to teach at the temple the true laws of the Father is based upon the resurrection, because that's what the Pharisees asked him. By whose authority do you do these things at our temple? And he said, well, destroy this temple, and in 3 days, I'll raise it up. He was simply answering their question. The resurrection is not a bloodshed sacrifice. It's a sign of authority that Jesus had to lay down his life and to pick it back up again. It was a commandment that he states emphatically in the book of John.
Well, what I like what you're doing, I mean, I like your answer, which makes it a little easier, of course, on my end, to address this, is that I think a lot of people are, you know, I, for lack of a better word, idolizing the Constitution rather than applying the principles that Jesus taught, so that if you're saying that, well, this law is on this particular thing is unconstitutional, which may actually be helping people not to starve, and therefore we shouldn't be doing it. The principle might be like, well, we should help people not to starve, but, you know, is this the best way to go about it? Maybe we can do it a different way, a better way, a more efficient way, or a long-term way. You know, that those kind of questions would be better than, well, it's not constitutional, so we should just cut it. Because I think that really what's speaking there is someone who wants the right to keep more money rather than be part of a collective which may or may not be helping people the way that Jesus would have wanted to. I mean, you can check to make sure it's not just throwing money away or it's corrupt or whatever, but that's kind of a problem I'm having with the constitutional issues. I mean, I you know, if you know what I'm saying.
Well,
I mean, you're not saying, you know, you've said it. You've said that, you know, if you're going to live in this world, you may have to go along with some of the programs here, but you can't do it in contradiction of. And that's what I was saying, that pretty much what you said.
Yeah, the Constitution of the United States is pretty much a document of no authority anymore. I know that hurts a lot of people's feelings, but the U.S. government doesn't even follow that document. The Article 1 states that no state shall use anything but gold and silver as legal tender in payment of debts, but no state does that. So why are they taking an oath of office at the time they become a governor and violate the most important law of commerce under the Constitution of the United States? That's why you won't see any constitutional attorneys taking any governor to any constitutional court, because they don't exist anymore. They're all statutory, they're all judicial toward a statutory court system that is totally rogue and does not follow that constitution that was handed down by the founding fathers. When it states we the people, it is not talking about us. It is not talking about the section of people that are known as the governed. It is talking about the founding fathers and the founding fathers only. And a lot of people confuse that preamble when it states, we the people of the United States do ordain this. It's not ordained by God. It was ordained by the signers, and those were the people. And when they died, they're the only ones that signed it as a contract.
No, you know, that's a good point. That's a good point. I'm glad you mentioned that. The reason why they don't have to honor the contract anymore is because the people it applied to are all dead. That's a great, you know, legal trickery. I mean, but it's pretty interesting.
It's all done by perception today. And that's all man-made governments are. They're unauthorized by God. They can't say that we are authorized by God to write this law. So they just, through a term under international law, they use the term common consent and write the laws. And whoever believes that has the authority to write the laws can enforce those laws. But I assure you, it still takes consent. And but that's another issue, and I don't want to go into that. Yeah. It always confuses people when I talk about the word consent.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to touch on that because I think in getting rid of one taskmaster, we don't want to just, you know, inadvertently pick up another one and realize that the Jesus or God is even a taskmaster. They're giving out principles. If you want to live, if you want to have life to its fullest and its length, here's the principles you follow, and there's really no reason to not follow them if you want that program. I mean, no matter what the law says or no matter what the principles are being pushed on you, they can push them on you. But, you know, I guess the phrase is fear the one who could – don't fear the one who can kill the body, but fear the one who can kill the body and the soul. I mean, it's not really a threat in my mind. It's like you're giving way too much power to this government. You're giving way too much importance to this physical existence when you have the eternity – idea in the wings.
Yeah, Jesus only recognized that power came from the Father, and when he was dealing with Pilate in John chapter 19, verse 11, he said, "Thou could not have no power at all against me except it were given thee from above." And then immediately Pilate henceforth sought to release him upon this statement. Even Pilate knew that a king from another kingdom, Pilate had no jurisdiction to judge him. But Rome did have a law against anyone that claimed to be a king on the sides that Jesus was really claiming.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In Rome, Caesar was considered the king among all the people. And that was the main accusation against Jesus, and ultimately what he was judged under. That's why they put the accusation on the cross, Jesus, King of the Jews, and wrote it in three languages. It was not some kind of religious law that the Pharisees wanted to kill him with. It was... ultimately, it was the fact that he claimed to be a king. And Caesar would not tolerate, back then, Caesar claiming to be the son of God is the same as saying, "You're the king of the world." And Caesar wanted that to be his title and his title only. In fact, even under Augustus Caesar, he put that on a Roman coin. Son of God in that language. So they still combine the so-called emperor and the son of their God together at the top of their political and religious level back then.
All right. Well, let's stop here. We'll take a break, and we'll shift gears when we come back and talk about something that very important. It is not that what we were talking about wasn't important, but this particular view, monetary view that Lionel had imparted to me, I think it's very important. We should listen to it and judge it on its merits. Not that you heard pundits say different, because when you and we'll talk about it when we go through it, that really deflation will be the ultimate goal of what the banks are doing. While having inflation for a short time, and we'll get into the reasons both why Lionel says so, and then I thought I got some applications to that. So stay tuned. We'll be back to continue on Feet to the Fire with Lionel Parkinson. Virginia are back. Talking with Lionel Parkinson. The book, The Holy Virus, has been the basis for the principles on our last discussion. And it is available through holyvirus.net. Again, Lionel and his publisher have a special deal for you listeners. $5 per address. So, you know, if you want to buy it, you could send and they will send it per address so that you can personally. I mean, it's meant for the listeners of the show to have it. It's not meant for a distributor to buy a whole mess and then sell it. So that's the idea of having the address there. It's made for the listeners. And so now what we're going to go into with Lionel next is the I think it's just a huge story. It is the future of the monetary situation. Most people will tell you, if you listen to various of the alternative talk shows, that super hyperinflation is coming. And in the mainstream, they're not perhaps as blatant as that, but there are some people who would talk about hyperinflation with the money being printed by the Federal Reserve. Well, in talking with Lionel privately, just talking on the phone, he brought his theory out that actually it's going to be the opposite eventually, and he laid it out rather well, and it was very terse, so I asked him if he can come on and talk in a more lengthy about it and talk to you so that you would know and have the information and perhaps act accordingly. Because when, as we talk to, and you will see as we go through this, it all fits real nice in the grand scheme of things. And so let me welcome back Lionel. One thing I want to say at the outset, Lionel, was that the problem I had with the hyperinflation model was that as the dollar devalues by inflation, you know, in other words, it takes more dollars to buy the same gallon of milk because the dollar is worth less. The problem with that is the debt is actually worth less as well. If you owe $100,000 on a house and a dollar becomes a penny, you now owe basically $1,000 worth of buying power on the house. And I thought that was strange since the banks themselves are, their main asset is literally people owing them money. That's where they get their, I mean, their main assets is the debt that's owed them, as well as having some property and whatnot, and bank reserves and gold or whatever. So I just thought, well, you know, in order to sacrifice the and blow up the dollar to start a world currency, they're actually going to lose a lot of their own. And I left it at that. I just didn't even think of another option. And in talking with you, Lionel, you come on about the idea of the dollar actually, how would I say that, inflating in value. But that's not inflation. What's the correct word to say when I talk about this?
Well, there's inflation and deflation. But when deflation is, by definition, even though it doesn't apply in our modern-day economics, in the old world, it was when they inflated the monetary system by printing dollars up and above the amount of gold that they held in reserve. Let's say that you had $100,000 of gold in a bank, but the state would inflate their monetary system to $200,000. Now your paper notes were worth only 50 cents on the dollar based on how much gold was in that state bank. See, back in the days when the country ran on the Constitution, only states could operate on, or the banks, state banks could only operate on the gold standard. So whenever they were not really allowed to inflate above what they had in reserve. So when they deflated, they could never really deflate. So they could only print as much money as they had in the bank, and they would issue those notes out to the people while they held on to your gold, which was really nice of them back then. But to increase the value of the dollar today, is it's something that I don't even want to discuss in depth, because what they've been doing for the last...
Let me stop here. I wanted to finish, and then we'll take off. I want to finish. My point is that most people are looking at them printing more dollars without anything more backing it, and therefore the dollar actually buys less per dollar, and that's what we technically called inflation. And so the opposite of that you would think of would be deflating the dollar, but in reality what would be happening is that the dollar itself would end up having more buying power. And now all the pundits and all that saying, they're saying that, that's not even an it. They're not even thinking of that. They're saying that the dollar is going to be worth more and worth less and less and less. But in talking with you, you have explained that eventually what will happen is the dollar will actually increase in its buying power value, which means that the people who have the dollars and have the debt will both make a lot of money in terms of buying power, and the people who then have the commodities or have the gold or have land and whatnot, it will actually go down in the dollar amount. It will take $1 to buy $2 worth of stuff. Therefore, the dollar amount on your land or on your gold will go down while the buying power goes up. So the person who had the actual dollars is going to have a manyfold increase in value, while the people who have the commodities will have the opposite. Oh, hold on one second. So that is the point we're coming on here, and we'll go into detail. But what turned it for me was that if the dollar were to increase in value, the banks would have their cake and eat it too. They'd have the dollars and they'd have the debt, and they would have the greater value, where the people who are now being told to flee from the dollar and buy commodities and properties, and I'm not necessarily mentioning food, because that might not, you know, depending upon economics, people might not be able to grow it or whatever, but I'm talking about, you know, like gold and silver.
Right.
Those will actually decrease in relations to the numeric dollar, so the debt would then still be there, and so when people owed a lot of money, they would still owe a lot of money. Whereas in the hyperinflation model, they would actually owe less money, even though their dollar would buy less. But anyway, I hope I didn't mess everybody up with that. I was trying to make it as simple in a nutshell, but why don't you start from square one with this and set it all up?
Okay. Yeah, I was trying to give an old world definition of inflation, but now in the current system, instead of using the word inflation or deflation, what the proper word to use is deleverage. And the world is really deleveraging from all the leverage that they're trying, that they've been doing for 25 years. Yes, I believe that we are going headlong right over a cliff into a deflationary depression, not in hyperinflation. The U.S. dollar, the Federal Reserve dollar, is the world reserve currency. I believe this will be the case for probably at least another good decade, to be safe to say that. The reason why it's the world reserve currency is because if any country wants to buy oil, they have to convert their currency into dollars to buy oil. Oil is what this world really runs on, this current economic system. Russia has to do it. China has to do it. Every country that wants oil, they have to convert their currency. The last country that tried to disobey the Federal Reserve on that was Saddam Hussein of Iraq, when he stopped buying oil with dollars and tried to get the whole Middle East to do that. And you can see what happened to him. So, I do not anticipate that the world will go back on a gold standard and everybody will start owning their homes again and buying things with real money. Instead, I believe that things will get a lot worse, that the Federal Reserve will get actually far more powerful, and they are concocting a scheme to take just about everybody's money at the same time if they're involved with the mutual funds, the commodity markets such as gold, silver. The rhetoric for the last 15 years, or especially in the last 10 years, is to trade in your dollars and buy gold because they're going to trash the dollar, and you'll soon find that the price of everything that you need in life is going to go up. I believe this is the biggest economic lie to come down the pike, and it is setting up the people in this country and around the world for the biggest financial collapse. And it will all come down at the same time because you can't just, because all these markets went up over the last 15 years pretty much together. And the biggest market and the biggest overblown market right now is the gold market. And I'll get into the reason how they were able to push this up and how they are going to completely devastate the gold market in the future. And this will wipe out a lot of people in their pension funds and their individual retirement accounts because a lot of them are pouring their money into the gold ETF, which is now available for people to buy and place their whole future earnings into a mechanism that can go down in a matter of hours. And that transfer of wealth will totally devastate this middle class. And I'm sorry to say that most of those people will be the most honest people in this country. This is a well-orchestrated, concocted scheme, and it's just now beginning to unfold through the European debt crisis. Lately, Europe's brilliant plan to solve its debt crisis just recently was to fire the democratically elected leaders and put in power the unelected banker insiders who created the crisis to begin with. For instance, I hope you don't mind me going this direction, James.
No, no, let me just go. Okay. We need the background how this all works, because one can just say that and that's fine, but by laying out the groundwork, one can see how the mechanism is.
What is going on right now, and it's all over the news, you can't turn on a TV without it, you know, popping up in your face, is the European crisis. What you have is certain nations over there, specifically, there's a lot more than just the current three that are defaulting. But they'll constantly bring up Greece as one of them. For instance, the old Greek Prime Minister, George Papandreou, who they just recently fired. Remember, they just fired the democratically elected leaders and put in power the unelected banker insiders to head up Greece and Italy. But they got rid of George and put in Lucas Papandemos, the chief Greek central banker. They now have in place the very guy that they need to get things done. But what they've done is Wall Street and the bankers have concocted a self-serving scheme that will literally put trillions in their pocket but won't solve the European crisis. The massive sovereign debt defaults are coming fast. Already the haircut the banks will take on Greek debt alone has soared from 10 to 50%. Those Greek losses alone are enough to topple the infectious global banking industry. And they don't begin to deal with the far bigger losses in Spain or the enormous crisis that is in Italy. So now the plan is to loan dead broke European banks even more money to shore up their capital. Problem is they need many trillions. The money just does not exist right now. In the past, they talked about 3 trillion euros as a package, a bailout package. That was by turning to every major financing entity the world over, including the Federal Reserve, the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, the ECB, the European Central Bank. And they've even talked to Germany, and I remember a couple of weeks they were trying to get China to throw in some money. Because now China is solely dependent on the European market, because that's who they primarily sell. In fact, the world's largest market is the European market. When they go, the world goes. So that's the reason why they're gaining so much attention on the television. So major money sources have just run dry. They've tapped into all the major banks in the world for bailouts. For instance, Greece is on their sixth bailout. And recently they've been talking about a 1.4 trillion euro bailout package. But now they have no extra leverage that they can apply on that. I can tell you for a fact that the ECB, the European Central Bank, and its members have not figured out how to pull off this type of piece of Cajun money magic. They can't multiply billions into trillions out of thin air. Even if they did, that does not begin to supply the money needed to save the global financial system from the Greek, Italian, and Spanish defaults. My main concern about this whole situation is they're trying to expand it, make it look like they're trying to solve the problem, but ultimately they really don't even want to solve it. They want to make it look like they're doing a job, but I can tell you everything that they're doing is totally causing havoc and wreckage in these countries. What they call austerity programs is nothing more than extortion. This will guarantee Italy, Spain, and Greece a total economic disaster. The key point is that the banks of the world are broke. That's the fact. They're getting broker by the minute. They cannot be saved or bailed out or even liquidated in any orderly manner. The global financial system is just, I would say, about a hop, skip, and a jump away from a catastrophic meltdown. I don't know how many months or weeks we've got left. I just know that they don't have enough money. They're putting together a package. It looks like $1.4 trillion. They need about $3 trillion to buy themselves 6 to 8 months, and then the problem even expands and gets even worse after that. So there's not enough money that they can put together to fix this. So we don't have too much time, and that's why this program is so important, because I can give the foundation of what's going on and what they're trying to do, but if I don't relay to the listener how they can protect themselves, because everything in the television, on television, is going to tell you to buy gold and convert your dollars and into gold and you'll be okay. I believe that will be a recipe for financial disaster.
All right, well, let me stop here for 1 second. Now, you just said something that's very important. You're saying if I just tell people that this is coming, but don't tell them how to protect themselves, that would be bad. Well, you know what, Lionel? 90% of, and that may be a low number, of internet radio, alternative radio, alternative news sources, alternative TV, and all these things that are supposedly outside of mainstream, most of what they do is simply give you the bad news. And in this case, they're giving you the bad news, according to what you will be getting into here. They're giving you the bad news, which is also a lie, in order for you to go along with the program. And that's why, I mean, If this is why this is so important, because this particular viewpoint will never be heard anywhere else. Well, I shouldn't say that. You may be in other talk shows that do this, but I'm talking about in the general alternative, the mainstream alternative. They're never going to say this. They're all, you know, all these shows are sponsored by buying gold. I mean, that's the main, in fact, if you look at my webpage, I don't say buy gold, I say buy food. You know, it's very important that people, that you're going to have to prove, or at least you show just cause in this idea that, you know, gold is not the answer. And then, we'll be very grateful and happy to hear what would be a way we could protect ourselves, because it's very important. If you're going to be the town crier, that's great. We need to be alarmed. We need to hear things, but we also know we need to know what to do. And so that alone will put you head and shoulders over everyone else who are just telling you to, this is all going to happen. It's all going to happen. It's all going to happen. And their solution is buying gold, which will take you, according to what we're going to talk about here, which will take you down farther down the path to destruction. So go ahead. We got about, well, actually, tell you what. Let's take a little break here, and then we'll come out swinging with the next segment to start to lay out these issues of what's happening and what you can do. Hold on as we take a little break, and we'll get back with Lionel Parkinson, Holy Virus. Holyvirus.net is the webpage, and as Coach X says, like that there. Could you feed your family for a year, 2 years, or more from your garden if you had to? Do you have the right kind of seeds? Can you save your seeds from your harvest to plant next year? Heirloom Organics non-hybrid seed packs are a sustainable gardening choice of home, homestead, and professional gardeners throughout North America. Heirloom Organic seed packs are designed with your specific space, light, and nutritional needs in mind. A 1-pound selection of 22 seed varieties that can feed 2 people for a year for just $99. Got a family? The family pack has 27 seed varieties to feed a family of 4. There's even a homestead pack that has 31 varieties of seeds to feed 8 people for 1 year for under $250. And don't forget, these are organically grown and 100% non-genetically modified. And forget the Terminator gene that prevents you from saving seeds for next year's crop. The heirloom organic seeds can be harvested and saved from each generation to be planted the next year. Just go to our website at feed2fire.com and click on the heirloom ad to access a lifetime of natural nutrition and wholesome eating the way it was meant to be. We are back talking with Lionel Parkinson. Holyvirus.net is the webpage. When we were talking about something very important, this should be, people listen real close, replay the show, download the archives, replay it again and again, and listen to this section, because this is going to be very unique. Lionel will be explaining that what's actually coming toward the planet is not hyperinflation. Well, eventually it may be for a little while, inflation for a while, but is actually the opposite, deflation, which will increase the value of the dollar, and everybody holding dollar or debt will make a fortune, and everybody else holding everything else will be holding the bag. This is why they're trying to drive people into gold and other things at this point to fleece them later. And so welcome back, Lionel. And you just go with this, create this whole scenario here. I'll try not to interfere so that we make it as clear as possible for the people. The mechanism. What's to come, the mechanism of why what you're saying is real, and then what can be done to survive through it.
Okay. Getting back to the definition of deleveraging, when the banks, by the way, I always appreciate you diving in, because you explain things a lot better, or you summarize things that I say a lot better than I know. So, but deleveraging, when the banks loaned out all these all this money to people on liar's loans and ninja loans and no down payment loans in this country for a good solid decade. They loaned out literally trillions, okay? Trillions that will not ever get paid back. This was not printed money, by the way. This was all digitized. This was money that was just given to the banks. They were able to loan out way beyond what they even had in deposits. Government policies allowed them to do it this way. This created a highly leveraged loaning scheme. And why they did this, I cannot begin to explain, and it's all irrelevant. But it's all blowing up in their faces right now. So this in itself, when it doesn't get paid back, the banks have to hold this on their balance sheets as losses that will not get paid back. This is happening in Europe right now. This is happening in this country. The banks are all dead broke if they had to release their balance sheets on the basis of what they really own on the level of mortgages. This is why they have to bail out Greece every 2 or 3 months with money, because they are so far behind. They're way beyond. There's absolutely no saving Greece, but in this country, we're not much better off. The banks are broke. The money that you put in your savings account, your checking account, a lot of times these banks are gambling with it. They're playing games with it. Brokerage firms are not necessarily segregating their accounts with their clients. MF Global, for example, that just recently blew up, they were gambling literally with not just millions, but they're finding out that they lost billions of dollars of their clients' money by gambling in the areas these brokerage funds were gambling their clients' money in areas that their clients did not authorize them to gamble in the markets. Well, the banks are doing the same thing because they've lost so much money on their balance sheets, they don't know how to get it back. Even after the 2008-2009 bailout of this country, it still was not enough to really shore up the banking industry in this country, because they lost just in 2008 alone about $60 trillion. Now, there is only one way that they can hide this, and that is to value their balance sheets of all their mortgages at full value instead of at 10 cents or 20 cents on the dollar. So this is where the dollar is going to come in play in the future. If an economic disaster happens over in Europe and it trips the banks over there, it will trip the banks over here because they all bought into this mortgage play through what they call credit default swaps. And I'll get into that a little later too, but I want to explain deleveraging. When this money is no longer going to be paid back, not by the people that own the mortgages on the homes, not by the bailouts from governments, this is going to create in this country a deleveraging or a deflation of the monetary system, because it just dissipated, because nobody's going to be able to pay it, but somebody's going to take a loss. And this is how they're going to try and get people in this country to pay for the bank losses in the future, the same way they're trying to get the people in Greece to pay for their losses on their mortgages over theirs through what they call austerity programs. Instead of having the contagion of the problem of the banks tripping bank after bank after bank over, over here. They're trying to extend all the debt out to the citizenry through higher taxes, through value taxes. It's just literally making life impossible for them by cutting back their retirement plans, their health care, their anything that they are depending on a benefit is going to be gone. Their wages will go down. Taxes will go up. This will in itself cause more problems in tax receipts for the countries. For their currencies, it will be a disaster. But for the dollar, every country wants the dollar. They are willing to trade their debt for ours. Another word for debt is their money for the Federal Reserve dollar. Right now, every time the United States has an auction for dollars, there's three times the subscribers for the dollar than there is money to be given out. If Greece can't get anybody to buy their debt, world banks have to try and chip in and presently try and save them right now. The problem is their economy is so bad, they can't raise any money to even make the interest payments on the bailouts, not alone to shore up any guarantee of the principal that they are now indebted. So it is impossible to save Greece. It is impossible to save Italy. It is impossible to save Spain. They will go into an economic deflationary spiral that will impoverish their people for the next 50 years. This will extend itself into France, and it will catch fire right into England and just about every one of those 17 nations that make up the European Union. Germany is now considered the strongest because they are the best manufacturers in the world, so they claim. But even they will get hit pretty hard. But the European Union is such a large economy. It is the largest. And that deleveraging is ultimately going to make the world reserve currency strong because they're going to want to trade ultimately their euros right back into the dollar, even though right now the dollar is worth less than the euro. Presently, there's about $1.35 versus a dollar. That's how the euro is traded right now. About 2 or 3 months ago, it was $1.54 euros. So euro was worth $1.54 versus the dollar. So the dollar has already hit a bottom and is now climbing. That means eventually you're going to start seeing commodities start coming back down in price. Your oils, your golds, anything that we have to buy over here, the dollar will get stronger, even though the rhetoric on television is telling you that you're going to have to trade your dollars for gold because the Fed is going to somehow have to create a whole lot of money to bail out the world. Well, they're not going to do that because they want to, in my opinion, they want to save their own bank accounts. They've concocted this scheme, and there's just too much debt out there that is rolling around in the hundreds of trillions, and they are not going to create that kind of money to try and bail out everything, and it still wouldn't work because the economies would still not function. If they can't function with the bailouts they're receiving in Europe right now, they sure aren't going to function with these austerity programs that are forcing the people to try and pay back those bailouts. Because they have to try and pay back all that bailout money with higher taxes and they already have an economy that can't function on its own.
All right, well, what I'm trying to, I don't know if you said it, I missed it. I'm trying to see now, the dollar is going to rise. Is it in, is this because people will seek out the dollar and buy the dollar with their debt, thus revaluing the dollar because it now has something behind it? Like if you have a, a failed mortgage, for example, has nothing behind it, but now if you have dollars being bought by countries who have debt behind it, now there is something behind it.
Right. There's two factors involved.
Okay.
The deleveraging of the money that will never be paid back. That means it will never go into the economies. It's been.
Okay. Well, let's look at that. Where does that go? When you say it evaporates, or what does, if a bank says they got, you know, they got $100 million of bad loans that are never going to be paid back, what happens to that $100 million on the ledger book?
That's just it. The bank has to take a loss. But if they showed their balance sheets right now, they would have to admit that they are dead broke.
Right, right.
They don't want to do that. So they're playing this little game over in Europe, for instance. Instead of releasing their balance sheets, they're saying, okay, let's throw a little down payment on a bailout program for, let's use Greece, for example.
Okay, all right. Well, you said that. So that means they're waiting for time for the dollar to gain in value so that their losses will be less?
Now, ultimately, they know that we can pay our debt over here. We still have the highest, let's say, the best infrastructure. The reason why the world is buying the United States dollars is because we're the last country on the world that can actually have a little confidence in paying the debt off.
Okay.
It's not like we don't have a lot of debt over here, but the other countries are so bad off that they know that they can never pay it off. And that's why their interest rates are climbing, while the interest rates in this country are practically going to go back down to zero. It'd be much better for them to pump all their currency into the dollar just on the basis that they know that they can trust that their money is going to be there when they convert it into dollars, versus if they keep it in, well, let's say, under Greek or Italian or under the Spanish banks, they know they can't get anybody to buy their money over there anymore. They know that they're dead broke, so you can't. That's the reason why they have no way of paying back the money. For various reasons. In Greece, there's far too many people working for the government versus the private sector. There's just too many people on benefits. But ultimately, when you follow the interest rates of any currency, the one that has the lowest interest rates is the one that is the most strongest currency in the world. And right now, the dollar is pretty much it.
So we might look at the dollar as a sinking ship, but it looks pretty good compared to everybody else. So by everybody else jumping on this sinking ship, it will actually make it float. I mean, it's a poor physical metaphor, but I mean, logically, that's basically what we're saying here.
The smart money really is buying into the dollar, even though they're not receiving anything on their money.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's basically what's going on now. I should now continue. I hope I explained deleveraging and why the dollar will eventually will start climbing from here on out, probably for the next 4 or 5 years. And if the collapse occurs, there will not. Automatically, the dollar will soar like never before, and this will catch a lot of people off guard. This is, I think a lot of analysts know that this is coming. Some believe it's coming next year. And if that is the case, the dollar will be the greatest beneficiary, because the fact that there is not that many dollars in our economy right now, because the money that's been loaned out is all on a digital, highly leveraged, system now that just cannot be brought back. But once they have to release their balance sheets, once these banks get tripped off by Europe, all this ugly, balance sheet stuff literally comes to light, and the banks have to admit they're dead broke as the European nations are. When that happens, the stock market crashes, your commodities crashes, because nobody really has the money. The money has been, the wipeout has already occurred. It's just that the world system is not going to allow the masses to figure this one out. They don't want you to know that they're not going to print out the money to cover those losses. They're not going to destroy their own personal bank accounts. Germany literally came out and said, we will not print out euros to pay for these debts. That's the main argument going on over in Europe right now. Germany is literally saying there will be no inflation over here. We will guarantee it. And that's why they're trying to dump the debt on the people and force them to pay it over the next probably 50, 60 years. It'll destroy their economies. But they don't care. They'd much rather try and save the euro than to save their economies. And the Federal Reserve is not going to be any different with the people over here. They'd much rather trash the economy, trash people's investments, trash the real estate. They don't care if it goes down to 3 cents on the dollar, but they will save their precious monetary system, because that's where they get their power. That is where they can come in and buy real estate on pennies on the dollar when this next crash occurs. They do not want to inflate everybody's homes back up in price, because there's nobody here that has a job to pay for the loan money anyway, so why go down that road a second time? It sure didn't work the first time. I know this is really complicated, but it comes down to this. They want more power. In order to do it, they're going to have to deflate, not inflate. And that means a lot of people investing in gold are going to get slaughtered. And I do, I don't know if I have time in this section, but in the next section that we talk, I'll go cover the gold scheme that is being perpetrated in this country.
No, we probably here. We probably got a good five to 7 minutes left.
Okay. Well, let me cover some of the background again.
Yeah, why don't you go back? You kind of go back, give us an outline, because I still would like to have like a 1, 2, 3, 4. This is going to happen, then that's going to happen, then this is going to happen, and so on. Maybe that'd be nice to recap that way.
Oh, okay. Well, I believe what they have in plan now is another temporary bailout. Last I heard, they've been able to put together with all the four major central banks about $1.4 trillion that they're going to try and help Italy, Spain, and Greece get over the next 3 to maybe possibly 6 months. Greece's debt has to be refinanced twice a year, in July and in December. So when December 9th comes along, I think you ought to see some kind of announcement that they've put together a temporary package, even though they know it won't fix anything. It'll buy more time, kick the can down the road, do whatever they can to try and hold this together. Whether it will work or not, I don't know. But this is what they'll announce. That's what I expect by December 9th. When we get into spring, I expect this whole issue to come up again with France probably being another country on the list that's going to default. England is is most likely going to be next, but your Ireland, your Portugal, you know, these little smaller countries are going to, again, be asking for another bailout. And this whole issue is going to be raised again, and I think they're going to end up, by summertime, giving up on bailouts, and I think by then we'll see this whole thing unfold. And it's very likely by July they'll just announce they don't have enough money to bail out these countries anymore, and they're going to have to release Greece, Italy, Spain, Portugal, Ireland, a few more, and kick them out of the EU. That way the euro will remain strong, but Spain will have to go back to their pesetas. Greece back to the drachma, and so on. This is what I expect to happen in the spring and summer of next year. But when that happens, it will blow up the whole financial system, and our banks will have to admit that they're dead broke as well. And they will not, the credit markets will seize up, just like they were going to back in the winter of 08, before they had to announce all those bailouts over here as well. I know that there's a lot of secret money that they had to bail out back at that time to shore up the banks all over the world, and they had to kick out literally well over, I've heard as little as $7.7 trillion all the way up to $12 to $16 trillion. That's what the Federal Reserve had to do. I can't verify those numbers, but these are numbers that nonetheless are probably accurate.
Now they've recently come out with an accounting of the Fed where they did see that during that time frame you mentioned, it shows the Fed bailing out, secretly bailing out the banks, and it was I think it was $12 trillion that the audit gave. So you're right on with the numbers.
Yeah, there's not going to be much transparency, but every once in a while, in other words, to cover $60 trillion that is lost every year to the real estate market around the world that is wiping out the banks all over the world, yeah, the Fed is trying to cover up some of it by shoring up some of those banks with that money, but I assure you they will not continue doing that.
All right, so we'll stop here for a minute. But what we have at this point is we have the banks getting another bailout, and then come next year, at some point in the summer, there's going to be no more money left, at which case the American banks will have to lay down their cards and show that they're broke, and this would cause this verge. This is where the whole engine would stop. The plane is stalling. It's the cusping of the wave over the edge. I mean, you're at this point in time where the whole engine of the world's monetary system is now just stopped, and now we want to know what that reaction is. So maybe we'll take a little break here, and people will go hang themselves, and then come back and hear the analysis at that point. What will come after that? The dollar will revalue, and the mechanism for that, and then we'll get in what we can do to weather this storm. Does that sound good, Lionel?
Yeah, I also wanted to cover what's going on in the gold market.
Oh yeah,
behind scenes.
That's
well.
Right, gold. Okay, we'll get to that too. You know, we got the on this new format. We have more time to work with, so we'll be doing that. So let's and I'm stopping these breaks so I can fit this in some type of a schedule. I still do an hourly schedule here, so I gotta stop so I can figure out and so on. So we'll be back in a second or two, a little bit, to continue with Lionel as we look into the future of the money system. It's not going to come down like they've been saying, which that in itself is not really much of a surprise. I don't think anything's ever happened like they've said it anyway. So, but hold on, we'll be right back after this. talking with Lionel Parkinson. And then this particular news segments, we're talking about the future of the American dollar, the U.S. dollar, the Federal Reserve dollar, I guess would be a better way of saying it, more accurate way. And that the world is telling you hyperinflation's on the way, gold is the way to go, but Lionel is laying out the mechanism that he thinks will happen, which will preserve the dollar, preserve the debt the dollar has, and at the expense of that will be the commodities, we'll say, gold, land, whatever. These type of things would be devalued in the process of revaluing the dollar. And we've just been going through the mechanism. This might be hard listening. This is work. But it's whenever you go against the paradigm, it takes you, and you're laying down the groundwork, people's minds are going to have to change. They're going to have to think. You can feel the muscles in their brain, so to speak, straining to turn to a new position. But once everything lines up, it gets easier for the brain to see. So, and welcome back, Lionel. And I appreciate the process we're going through here. And so now we left everybody on that cusp of the U.S. banks showing their cards that they're worthless. The other banks are worthless, and now. What's going to happen? What are we going to do? We're sitting here frozen in time, waiting for the shoe to fall.
Yeah, it's really good stuff to hear, isn't it? It's a lot more complicated than just a whole bunch of banks all over the world losing on their loans to people when they took out loans. There's a lot of gambling on top of this bad loaning that went on in this country. And a key point is U.S. banks created trading instruments on all that debt that was loaned out so they could play in highly leveraged derivatives. And these instruments are known as credit default swaps. This is what complicates this whole issue, James, because not only did they lose trillions, but they're leveraging their bets through what was known as CDSs, and these credit default swaps were supposed to guarantee banks against losses from the EU debt. They were also going to make the banks some fast, easy profits. But major players bought into these trades, such as J.P. Morgan, Morgan Stanley, Bank of America. As you know, it's collapsing even when everything else seems to be still going up. Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, these are just a few. These and other banks use these swaps to way underreport their exposure to European debt defaults, but that is about to blow up in their faces, because with the leverage, they are now losing hundreds of trillions. And this is where it really gets, this is why they really have to hide this whole mess. Brokerage firms such as MF Global just recently just took a major loss. They admitted first $600 million, now it's up to billions. MS Global was run by a former New Jersey governor, I wrote his name down here, of Goldman Sachs CEO John Corzine. Now his investment firm has blown up as well. That is the second time this has happened. When Corzine retired from Goldman Sachs in 1999, he booked a trading loss of hundreds of millions of dollars. He has done much better this time. His trading losses are in the tens of billions. So this guy is, he's a real mess to markets. I guarantee you, this guy Corzine is not the only player who is betting on full payment of European debt. Many other major brokers and financial institutions did the exact same thing. All these players are getting burned badly, and that will hit the fan very shortly. And that's why this might not take till next summer. We could see something really unravel fast. So we're right back to 2008 again, whether people like to believe it or not. That's when the derivatives casino wiped out, and the AIG, Merrill Lynch, and these other major firms that required trillions in bailouts to the U.S. financial institutions. Since then, I think it was about $100 trillion in derivatives have been placed on European sovereign debts. that will never. This is the magnitude of this problem over there will affect this country in ways that will never. People won't even know what hit them, and that's why I'd like to go into the one thing that a person can do to protect himself. Okay. Pull your money out of the banks. Literally. Get it in physical money. I happen to know that there was a run on banks in this country because I'm starting it. So, if I'm right, that this world is going into a deflationary depression, the money that you get out right now on a physical level, not on a digital level, do not trust your bank, do not trust your mutual funds. MF Global is an example of what happens when you trust a brokerage. This is going on all over the world. The banks are playing in this casino.
Yeah, let's stop here for a minute and say the MF Global, they've actually seized accounts. Maybe, I don't know if the word seize is a best way to say it, but people who had money on accounts don't have money on accounts anymore. I don't know how else you want to say that.
They lost their money.
Yeah.
Plain and simple, they lost their money. If somebody else has it, good luck getting it back. When this whole ugly scene goes around the world, good luck trying to get your money out of your bank account that has FDIC insurance, because that has been broke since 2009 as well. They've been in the red of tens of millions of dollars. They don't have the money to cover your $100,000 account. So the underlying insurance protecting people's personal accounts is not there. This is really the only way that I know that you can protect yourself from this global meltdown, is to get your money back under your protection, and when it happens, theoretically, your dollars will be worth far more than what they're worth right now, because there's going to be far less money in the world to buy things with. That's what happens in a deflation. This is what happened in the 1930s. The price of everything shot way down. You could buy whatever you wanted on pennies on the dollar if you could find a penny.
Yeah.
I remember every once in a while I will talk to an old person that has survived that time era, and they're more than happy to tell you what it was like back then. They did not even want to leave the lights on that long. They conserved everything. Everything they did, there was no waste. And it's really interesting to talk to people that go through a deflationary depression. Well, this one will be on a far more debilitating level than the 1930s, which very few people are around today to even talk about. So it wasn't just a bad banks loaning out too much money to unqualified people that wanted loans on homes. It's the fact that we're dealing with now gamblers on your deposits in your brokerage firms, in your bank accounts. It's like the judicial system is literally turning their heads all this, because it's too vast, too large, and they don't know what to do about it now, because the wipeout has already occurred.
Let's take gold, for example. When you have a situation where the dollars are scarce and the dollars are buying more, does the value of gold go down merely because no one will want to buy it anymore because they prefer to have the dollars? Is that basically the mechanism for the falling of gold?
Yeah, there's always been, that's exactly what it is. It's, there's always the demand for gold versus the supply of gold. There's plenty of supply. The mines are supplying far more gold right now than was being bought up at these prices. But the prices are not really coming down because the prices are being artificially jacked up through the derivative market, through Wall Street, through exchange electronic trading funds that buy more gold than there really is in the warehouses and also in the futures market. What has changed recently is they have done a, well, the gold cartel has done for gold what OPEC did for oil. It has driven the price of gold to many times its true market price. They did this by turning to their old friend, the World Gold Council. Among other things, the World Gold Council is the spokesman for the gold mining industry. Gold mining companies funded it directly with a tax on each ounce of gold they produced. The World Gold Council's stated mission is to do whatever it takes, and I mean whatever, to get the gold price as high as possible, to get as many people on board to buy the metal. They needed to get, back in 2002, the price of gold was going down to below $300 an ounce. This is when I sold my home and literally bought everything with gold, by the way. I knew the price was way, way down, and I did the same thing with silver. I was very confident back then that was a safe time to buy it. Now I'm directly opposed to buying gold because I now am about to release information, probably for the first time, that will prove that the gold market will crash right along with this global meltdown. And this global, this gold cartel turned gold bars recently into a paper asset. In the past, people could never really buy gold on paper unless they bought, like, stocks of a mine. You know, like Hecla Mining or something like that. Back when gold was dead in the water, trading around $300 an ounce, the World Gold Council's chairman was Christopher Thompson. At the exact same time, he was also chairman of the major South African gold mine, Johannesburg Goldfields. Thompson and the World Gold Council cooked up a scheme to create a gold-based ETF. It's now known today as the Spider Gold Trust. They built the perfect gold selling machine that enabled the mines to create a made-to-order gold bubble, one they could sell record amounts of gold into. This allowed mines to literally sell gold that they could not sell through physical hoarders or people like me back in 2002. They knew that only so many gold buyers will buy gold coins and only so many people will buy gold jewelry or gold bullion. But storing gold is hard. Each time you buy and take delivery of gold bars, you have to assay them. They face problems with theft and transport, that sort of thing. But in short, gold had several or severe limits as an instrument, which put the gold mines up the creek. They could not really sell it as a paper asset until these guys came in and changed it. They desperately needed more customers going to buy physical gold itself. Was just not getting the job done. The price was still falling in 2002. So the gold producers found a way people could buy gold without ever having to take delivery, store it, or even own it directly. That was what the gold ETF does. It turns gold into a paper asset security. When you buy gold ETFs today, you don't actually buy gold. You buy shares of stock in the ETF. The ETF created by the same gold mining companies that sell you the gold, store it in a warehouse for you. So you buy stock in a warehouse of gold. Mm-hmm. In effect, ETFs turn gold ownership into a paper asset again.
So I'd imagine the more gold physically in that warehouse, the value of the share goes up, and vice versa.
Well, yeah, as long as there's more and more people buying that gold, it drives the price of gold up because it forces more demand, because you no longer have to sell people gold physically. You can do it through a paper asset. So they hired James Burton and made him CEO of the World Gold Council. Now, from 1994 to 2002, Burton was, get this, CEO of the California Public Employees Retirement System, known as CalPERS. CalPERS is one of the biggest investment disasters the world has ever seen. It has regularly gotten its clock clean in one market wipe out after another. In April 2010, a Stanford University study found the unfunded liability of CalPERS and two other California state pension plans is over $500 billion. That is how much they owe their retirees and have no money or funding for it. This is a big reason California is stone cold broke. Burton bears part of that responsibility. So they pulled this guy from that California retirement system, put him in charge of this gold ETF system, and I'm going to read some of his statements of what's going to happen to the gold market here very shortly. Why did the Gold Council choose someone who played a major role in bankrupting the state of California, someone who admitted he knew nothing about gold and had never invested in it before? James Burton was connected to some very high investment firms. He ran one of the biggest pension funds in the world. He convinced others, huge pension funds, hedge funds, financial institutions, to invest big time in the Spider Gold ETF. So now you're starting to see a thread. It took a guy that bankrupted California, put him in charge of the World Gold Council that is pushing now the biggest electronic trading fund that is trying to sell gold to the world right now. When they saw they could get in on the ground floor, all these investment firms, Burton knew they were making a bubble that would end in tears for millions of people. A few early investors included Notre Dame University, Texas Teachers Pension Fund, money managers such as John Paulson or Paulson and Company, hedge funds, and one of the world's richest billionaires, Lawrence Fink of BlackRock, George Soros of Soros Fund Management. By the way, Soros just recently pulled out of the gold market, which kind of tells you something. These huge investment companies and pension funds and dozens of others bought a lot of gold ETFs, a lot of the Spider gold, not because of the extra demand for gold itself, but because the World Gold Council had finagled a way to turn gold into a security like stocks and bonds and then sell the security en masse. It's similar to the way how real estate mortgages were bundled and turned into securities and then sold to the highest bidders. That is how the real estate bubble was formed and then eventually busted. This will turn gold into a security through the ETFs is what the World Gold Council is planning to do. And as with all bubbles, the big guys buy in first secretly without, breathing a word. This is what they did, when the price of gold was put down right around that $300-$400 an ounce level. Now the big guys are loading at the peak exactly when all the spin and hyper boil, all the big talk on TV is coming to play. I can't drive down the road without finding some guy holding up a sign wanting to buy or sell gold to you. The sad truth is that the masses are always the Johnny-come-latelys. They get there a day late and a dollar short. So these manipulators now hold nearly 3,000 metric tons of gold in this gold fund, and the warehouses under the electronic trading funds, making them the fifth largest holder of gold behind the U.S., Germany, Italy, and French governments. But all the government gold is effectively held off the market. It doesn't trade or enter the price equation. It sits in government warehouses. It's untouched. So the manipulators are the 3,000-ton gorilla in the gold market. So there's Burton, James Burton of the World Gold Council, the chairman, he admitted this. He said he knew their manipulation would drive prices higher. He knew they would create a bubble like in 1980. That bubble would burst overnight. It created a bear market that lasted 20 years. Now, this is a actual statement that Burton said. I'll quote him here. Our biggest concern was we would burn another generation of investors and start the whole goddamn tale of tears over again. Incredibly, they didn't, Burton goes on to say here, I don't want to use all his language here, it's pretty bad. It says, our primary mission was to find every button we could push to stimulate demand. We also knew we had launched something we could not control. So this guy who bankrupted California through their pension plan admits that this gold market is going to devastate people. Now, he's not even talking about the global situation like I am. Now, when you have a banking industry that will have to one day admit that they're completely dead broke, that people won't have access to their bank accounts, won't have access to buy gold, anything, not alone gold itself, and this warehouse is sitting with over 3,000 tons of gold that has to be sold into the market in a market that has already collapsed. Gold will collapse like no other market in the world because it now has far more gold available than what people even want and want to sell everything they've got in a falling market. You could see the price of gold was 95% in a global meltdown very easily. And that's why I'm warning people not to go into gold, but to just simply pull your money out of the bank account and get it under your control, because you're not going to earn any interest. Just keep enough in there to keep your debit cards going and, anything that you need to buy off over the phone.
Right.
In other
right.
words, get control of your own finances, and that is now. If you want to take it a step further, and if you really believe in what I'm saying, then there is a inverse ETF that bets on gold, the price of gold going down in price. Thereby, you can make a lot of money as the price of gold goes down. But I don't necessarily recommend that unless you have a whole lot of extra cash to gamble with. But
yeah, because you're relying on that system not being confiscated by some other system. You know, it's going to be dog eat dog at that point. No one's going to be caring. They're going to be sucking up whatever it takes to do whatever.
Right, with all this leveraged money out there that will never get paid back to the banks. They'll never see it. The average bank account what will happen is the government will put limits, withdrawals on everyone in the country. You'll probably see that overnight with Europe. I'm sure over in Greece, the people in Greece have done a run on their banks and, wanted to get their money out. But the news will never record that. I'm just simply saying to anybody that is listening to this program, why wait? You're not going to earn that much money on your money in a bank anyway. There is no interest rates because everybody in the world wants money in dollars right now. they know that we can pay, still pay off our debts, but Europe cannot. And that is my recommendation for those that believe that this is going to turn into a deflationary depression rather than an inflationary one. It just does not compute in my mind that inflation is going to be the answer, because that's what they've been relying on to create all their bubbles in the first place, was leverage and inflation. And this is what has brought an ultimate climax, and that ultimate climax will be a deflationary meltdown.
Okay, let's stop there, and then we'll come back and continue from this point. You did get all of it in one segment, so this is a good chunk right here, and then we can come back and digest more of it after we take this break. So stay tuned. Hold in there. We'll be right back.
I'm James Othayanchik, the Black Knight of Talk Radio and creator and host of Feet to the Fire. Have you ever noticed the high volume of commercials on most talk shows? It is to the point that it seems like topics are the bait and the guests are the fillers to sell products. I've made a conscious decision to keep disruptions to a minimum and provide more uninterrupted time for the real reason you tuned in. You hear guests with more time to make their points, allowing me and listeners to intuitively, intelligently formulate questions by having less interruptions to break the stream of consciousness. Feet to the Fire may be free to listen to, but it's not free to provide. We rely heavily on donations to offset the expenses of producing the show. If you like what we are doing and enjoy the show, why not consider donating via PayPal or a major credit card from our website, feettofire.com.
Or write us at Feet to the Fire, P.O. Box 511, Minooka, Illinois, 60447. Thank you. Back with Lionel Parkinson. The website, which you can really reach Lionel, it is holyvirus.net. Inside there's going to be some kind of method to leave email or a form or whatnot. You could talk to him about this subject if you have questions and so on. I have found in the past other listeners who have contacted Lionel who have contacted me, and in the process were quite happy with his way he handled their questions, and with this topic being, it's pretty heavy topic, and you're not going to hear it much from other places, since most of the alternative media is backed by gold somehow, selling gold, that here in between this and that might not be too many other places. but you can contact him anyway through the website holyvirus.net. And welcome back, Lionel. I'm assuming I didn't mean to just put you out there, but I'm assuming that if people want to get in touch with you on this subject, that they can do it through your webpage.
Yeah, that's fine. I talk to a lot of people on this subject because I'm interested in warning people. You know, it's not like I'm inexperienced in the gold market. I've actually followed this ever since the decline of gold and silver back in 1980. I mean, I can tell you the exact dates that gold busted, you know, in 1980. It was January 8th, to be precise. And I remember back then, it hit a top of about 850 for about an hour, and then came down about $200, down to about 650. And then, but back then, the silver market was the premier market. It was controlled primarily by a couple of brothers known as the Hunt Brothers, and they were well known for cornering the market, which was a key phrase in the silver market. They bought literally everything off the exchanges, and they were going to plan on buying it physically off the exchanges, and then the exchanges changed the rules on them and forced no more buyers, but they could only sell their product, and this collapsed the silver market, and gold and everything went back down. It took many, many years, but it was a very frustrating time for gold holders, and silver went from $52 all the way down to about $4.32 an ounce in a period of 21 years. Quite a devastating loss over a period of two decades. But the big move in gold has already came, and now that does not mean that gold couldn't hit 2,000 in the coming months. What I am saying is that what we have here is a market that has been stretched pretty much to its end conclusion. The dollar is gently moving back up on balance month over month now, and this will put extreme pressure on the commodities market as well as the stock market. Even though they can use derivatives to push one market in the opposite of the direction of where the dollar might be going. So these markets are very highly manipulated. I really don't recommend people trading them, but this is the facts that's going on. People on Wall Street are interested in taking everything that you're worth, and they pretty much have done it. Everything is broke. Governments are broke. Banks are broke. The underlying insurance protecting your bank account is broke. There is no denying this. You can look on the internet and check the FDIC. I guarantee you, they are broke. So they can tell you that they'll insure your bank account, but it's not in a global meltdown. They will not.
And that's true. What people may not realize that when you have the FDIC, the fine print is that they'll insure you up to $100,000, basically, if they're able to, or if they want to, or if, you know, there's not like they will absolutely assure you. It's like, yeah, we'll do it, most likely. Well, most likely we'll be able to do it. I mean, you know, it's one of those things. It's not an absolute.
Yeah, right now, if banks hold up in this country right now, the FDIC just calls up the Fed, and they send some guys over the weekend, and they pretty much over the weekend when they are closed, especially on a Sunday, they do their little counting tricks and do whatever they can for that bank. But in a global meltdown, forget it. Even the Fed will not will not guarantee anything like that. There'll be withdrawal limits, which is another way of government seizing the money in this country. And forget about moving it out of the country. It's that's why it's imperative that if the listener gets anything out of this program, get your money out of your mutual funds, get it out of the banks, get it under your control, make sure it's the physical dollars, and that's my recommendation.
Well, make you know, sure there is a mini little kind of tangent example of this. When the Russia collapsed, they literally, the currency that they used there literally was the physical dollars. I mean, literally, they would get plane loads of dollars, you know, into Russia, and the people on the street were using physical dollars as their currency. And so it's kind of like what we're saying here is the dollar will be the way. And say, like, wait a minute, gold has always been worth money. If I have gold coins, I can sell them on the street. Well, one of the reasons why I haven't bought gold coins, and besides they're expensive to try and preserve in the event of hyperinflation is, well, it's not necessarily easy to use gold coins. The dollar bill by law is mandated. So if the dollar bill is doing pretty good, or at least doing okay, why would someone buy gold coins from you for dollars when that gold coin it has to be exchanged to dollars again somewhere? And if the dollar is on the rise and gold's on the way down, nobody's going to buy that gold from you. I mean, you know, maybe the, you know, I don't know. I mean, no one's going to buy it.
Well, back in 2002, when I was interested in buying it myself, I screamed at people, this is the time to buy it. This is the time to do it. And I led by example back then, but nobody listened to me back then, and I doubt anybody's going to listen to me now when I tell them they better sell out while this crisis is incredibly high right now. But
it is kind of interesting, too, because basically what you are saying is the polar opposite of what these others are saying. For someone to turn around and go polar opposite, they're really going to have to listen to this over and over again to really understand the mechanism, because talk about a step in faith. I mean, you know, one might do something in the faith of it working out because they believe in the mechanism or whatever. And this is one of these cases. Logic would dictate that the way things are going, both the mainstream as well as the alternative agree on gold. Now, mainstream is not as obvious as the alternative. The alternative is crazy. But people have said throughout time, gold is still an artificial value. I mean, you can't eat gold. You know, you can't wear it, per se. You can't build a house out of it, you know, per se. Things like food will always have value because you need to eat it. So even gold is still an artificial means of conveying some type of a value system. So it's not in and of itself. It's not beyond crashing, even more so than history has shown.
Yeah, if people don't believe me, that's fine. But they should follow at least. For example, George Soros. I know that he recently got out of the gold market. In fact, I traced pretty much when he got into it. I wrote down, George Soros helped inflate this gold bubble, and so did the Chinese Communist government. 30 days after that Spider Gold ETF was created, it was the fastest growing ETF in history, by the way. It raised $1.9 billion. And according to the SEC filing, Spider Gold is the largest single holding back then by George Soros hedge fund. Soros is the fourth largest holder of the gold ETF. Now, this is, you know, at the time it was shooting up in price, but I know that 3 months ago he died out. Another huge investor back then is the China investments, the $300 billion sovereign fund of the Chinese Communist government. Yes, the Chinese government is helping manipulate the gold price higher. I don't know what they're doing right now. They sure aren't going to be transparent about it like gold, like George Soros was. Unless I want to call him Gold Soros. International Investment Paulson Company is believed to hold the largest number of shares in this particular fund. And Paulson runs one of the world's biggest hedge funds. He is one of the world's richest billionaires with a personal net worth of over $12 billion. So he was another guy that was involved with this hedge fund, getting in on the ground floor when James Burton was pushing this. This guy bankrupted CalPERS, the public employees and retirement system, had some powerful connections, and this is why the World Gold Council got a hold of him, because he had these kind of high up connections of billionaires that could help them get this gold scam going. This is I can tell you without any reservation that the gold market is the biggest bubble probably since the tulip mania.
The what mania?
The tulip mania. Have you ever heard of tulip gold mania?
Yeah.
That was probably the biggest of all time, but this would be coming a good second. Based on the people involved, the concocted scheme since 2002, this is the information I've been able to dig out. This is what scared the crap out of me to get out of the gold market 2 years ago. So,
kind of in the summary on these two issues, we talked about the dollar raising in value, world collapsing around it, and now the gold collapsing. Now, is this gold collapse in and of itself unrelated to the dollar, or is it based on this dollar reevaluation, which will drive it? Is this something that's going to bust by itself, or will the dollar reevaluating cause this bust?
Well, I believe all these markets have been going up together. The stock market, the commodities market, they've all been pushed up as bubbles, some more than others. I simply mentioned the gold market because it is by far pushed and leveraged far more than any market I've ever seen. But they're all going to come down together at the same time, because that's where the big transference of wealth, I believe, will occur. So in my opinion, I don't expect the gold market to precede the stock market. I believe it will all come down fast and hard, and these people that are playing in their mutual funds are not going to get out as fast as they think they can. No. I know that they can push a button, but we've seen on May of 2010 flash crashes that can occur within minutes, and the stock market can literally lose thousands of points in a matter of a minute. I feel if the European market really melts down like I expect it to, this will create a flash crash around the world that people will not be allowed the time to get out of their money at all.
Well, you know, plus I would imagine you have these computer programs that can trade in a fraction of a second. You can have millions of shares, probably billions of shares per second, technically. Plus, you probably have a priority system. So the favored individuals will have the ability to perhaps get their trades through prioritized over the little guys. And so for those who do get trades in early and only lose less, are going to be the special people anyway with connections. And so with completely, putting the way you can trade billions of times a second or whatever, billions of shares a second, and with the priorities, it doesn't look real good for the regular person kind of sitting around collecting it?
No, these markets are specifically designed to keep people in their positions. So when they see the market come down 500, 600, 700 points in a week, they're used to now seeing it go up 500, 600, 700 points the next week. They are being mentally conditioned to believe that if the market comes down, it will go right back up. This is all, I believe, the mental conditioning of getting people not worried, not pulling out of the banks, not pulling out of their mutual funds. They will feel like, okay, this is just another down market. It will come right back. Well, when the big one hits, it will not come back. This country will go in through a deflationary depression and stay there for the next 25 years. That is how bad and serious this scenario, and I really appreciate the opportunity to be able to at least talk on your program. At least I've done the homework on this, and I just wanted to kind of give you a quick thank you for allowing me to be here.
Well, you're welcome, and I'm sure all the people at home are going, thanks, Lionel. thanks for ruining my day or whatever. But, no, I mean, this is the important point you're saying, too, is not that you're coming in and just saying what's going to happen, but that you're also telling people, well, here's how you can minimize the impact. Obviously, if you own your own house, that's going to be better because you don't have to worry about your income. Your ability to make income would be survival, you know, rather than paying a mortgage and whatnot. And if you own your own car and you don't have a lot of credit card debt, obviously that's going to put you in a much better situation. And if you can change your money into dollars, physical dollars, not bank accounts, not some kind of funds or stocks or whatnot, and so that people should start to be selling their items. Now, somebody might accuse you of being some kind of plant to start a run so that, you know, to make money, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, that's kind of ridiculous because if you were a plant to do this, you would be, I don't know, you would be in a position to be on the, if it was a mainstream deal that you were supposed to be following, you'd be on the mainstream talking about it.
Yeah, I would have to promote something, and I'm not really promoting anything other than self-survival on a financial. You know, I could easily go into, saying shorting gold or silver or oil or the stock market, but that's only for those that have a little extra cash. But I'm not going to make recommendations on which ETF or...
And plus, I mentioned this earlier, you're going to start doing that, you're going to still trusting that whole system that's collapsing. So, it's like when they start taking money from people to... survive, I don't think they're going to be looking, wait a minute, this guy was selling short. Well, too bad. We want their money anyway. You know, one system will collapse and just pull everything down with it. So,
yeah, remember that there's literally trillions and trillions of dollars that cannot be paid back. That cannot possibly even satisfy all the short positions that are expecting this collapse to pay them off. So that's why I believe a lot of these brokerages are literally gambling with unauthorized segregated funds of their clients because they're trying to hide losses that their own brokerage is obviously creating. Otherwise, they wouldn't be gambling with other people's money. There is so much that is going on out there. I would not trust any brokerage or bank, and I'm just telling people ahead of time. You still have plenty of time to get your house in order. There's absolutely no reason to keep your money in the bank. I've given you the reasons why everything is broke. They admit they are broke. You can get about any analyst to agree with me as well, and the FDIC is broke, so and banks are not paying anything in interest, so there's absolutely no reason to have a lot of money in the bank in the first place. you might as well get it out under your control in case what I have to say should happen. I'm not saying it's going to happen tomorrow or next month. I'm just saying the odds-on probability climbs as these European nations are defaulting. It's eventually going to trip the banks, and I know how much our banks are interrelated with their banks over there, and they cannot keep on hiding their losses on their balance sheets like they are right now. If they had to release their balance sheets, everybody would want to pull their money out of the banks because they're dead broke. They know that. So they're not going to value their mortgage balance sheets anything but at full value. And the government is allowing them to do that right now. They do not want them to release their balance sheets. There's just too much money that has been lost, and it's in the hundreds of trillions, and they have gambled hundreds of trillions on top of that. So we really don't have the perfect transparency. And why would you want to trust any government or banking institution that will not release their balance sheets?
You know, I just to let you know that with the passage of the bill in the Senate that the president will soon sign, shows like this might be considered illegal. So you might as well listen to them while you have them and take the information from it, because obviously they don't want you to know information to expose what they are doing within the system to the point where they're trying to actually cut off information on these areas. If the controlled media isn't good enough, they want to go after the uncontrolled media. So I appreciate you, Lionel, coming on and talking this. I mean, you're gaining nothing. You're re-risking yourself as far as exposure to ridicule even with this Senate bill, you know, you might be considered some kind of financial terrorist because you're telling the truth. And so, I appreciate your convictions to be, you know, basically come out and tell this to people to no profit of yourself. And for their help, and I appreciate that. And we'll keep in touch in future in case other things happen. You want to talk about it? You know, you have an open door here, as long as I have one. So again, I appreciate you coming on.
All right. Yeah. Again, I appreciate it very, very much.
All righty. Well, you got it there. Download it. Listen to it again and again, especially the last say hour of this show, because it's very important. Very important to get this out, share it with people for their information, and then you can do what you feel best you can do in your situation. And that ends up this one. We'll be back next week, hopefully live, feet to the fire, reach for the skies within.
Fire is a production of IPS Media Works on the OnSIG Radio Network of Stations.